VOA News. A claim of responsibility for a terrorist attack in Indonesia. Islamic State is claiming responsibility for Thursday's coordinated bomb and gun attack in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta that left 7 people dead, including all 5 attackers. VOA Steve Herman is in Jakarta.
The head of the Jakarta Provincial Police, who is the former head of the elite counterterrorism unit here in Indonesia, saying that this was indeed the work of a group under Islamic State, a military wing headed by an Indonesian who's believed to be in Raqqa, Syria, and that they will find those who masterminded this attack.
The violence began with a series of explosions in the mid-morning hours in an area near a shopping center, along with luxury hotels, embassies, and other office buildings. In total, 6 blasts were reported. At least one of those blasts occurred close to a Starbucks coffee shop frequented by foreigners. The coffee chain later said it had closed all of its locations in Jakarta as a security precaution. And by late afternoon, authorities declared the attack over, saying all 5 militants were killed. 2 other people, a Canadian and an Indonesian, were also killed, according to police. Turkish tanks and artillery have attacked Islamic State group positions in Iraq and in Syria in retaliation for the suicide bombing in Istanbul, which killed 10 tourists. That, according to the Turkish prime minister, close to 200 extremists were rendered ineffective. That's the government's term for killed in the artillery strikes over the past 48 hours, according to the official. It was unclear how Turkey verified the number of dead or their membership in the extremist group. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization has announced an end to the Ebola virus outbreak in Liberia, meaning all 3 countries at the epicenter of the West Africa outbreak are now considered Ebola-free. The WHO announcement Thursday came after 42 days without a new reported case in Liberia. When announcing the milestone, the WHO cautioned that more small outbreaks are expected and called for continued strong surveillance to keep the disease at bay. 2 previous attempts to declare Liberia free of the virus ended when infections re-emerged, the last being in November. Rick Brennan is WHO's Director of Emergency Risk Management and Emergency Response.
This is an important milestone and a very important step forward. We have to say that the job is still not done. That's because there is still ongoing risk of re-emergence of the disease because of persistence of the virus in a proportion of survivors.
This is the first time all 3 countries at the epicenter of the outbreak, Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, have been Ebola-free at the same time. Sierra Leone was declared Ebola-free on November 7th, Guinea on December 29th. Another round of aid convoys arrived in 3 besieged Syrian towns Thursday following the delivery of the first batch of much-needed food and medicine earlier in the week. The International Red Cross, which is partnering with the United Nations and the Syrian Red Crescent, said the trucks were going to Madaya, Fuab, and Kafraya. The first round of convoys arrived in those 3 towns late on Monday. Rebels opposed to President Bashar al-Assad control Madaya, a town of about 42,000 people near the Lebanese border that government troops have blockaded for months. The rebels are besieging Fuab and Kafraya. A record number of candidates, more than 550 from nearly 30 parties, and vying for just 113 seats are running in Taiwan's legislative election Saturday, the same day voters will choose a new president. Much of the legislative race has focused on how many seats the opposition Democratic Progressive Party may win and whether they'll take control of the legislature and presidency for the first time in history. Yet in the central city of Changhua, female candidate Li Lin Chan could possibly reach another historic milestone if she wins by becoming the island's first immigrant lawmaker. She is from Cambodia. The 1820s frontier revenge thriller The Revenant landed a leading 12 nominations for the 88th Annual Academy Awards, while the acting categories were again filled entirely by white performers a year after the Oscars came under withering criticism over its lack of diversity. I'm Ira Melman reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The World Health Organization says the most recent outbreak of Ebola in Liberia is over, bringing the number of cases in West Africa down to zero for the first time since the regional epidemic began in early 2014.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details next. Also in the news, three UN human rights experts are scheduled to visit Nigeria to examine what is being done to rehabilitate and reintegrate women and children once held captive by Boko Haram militants. And Niger's defense minister says four officers accused in an attempted coup have confessed. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Zambia, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. The World Health Organization says the most recent outbreak of Ebola in Liberia is over, bringing the number of cases in West Africa down to zero for the first time since the regional epidemic began in early 2014. The WHO reports all known chains of transmission have been stopped in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, the three most heavily affected countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports more than 11,300 people have died and more than 28,500 infected since Ebola was first recognized in Guinea in March 2014. WHO Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response, Rick Brennan, says it has taken an enormous collective effort by the affected countries and international community to free West Africa of this disease.
While this is an important milestone and a very important step forward, we have to say that the job is still not done. That's because there is still ongoing risk of re-emergence of the disease because of persistence of the virus in a proportion of survivors.
The World Health Organization reports the Ebola virus can persist in the semen of survivors for up to 1 year, and they can transmit the disease to their partners. There have been 10 flare-ups of Ebola in the West African countries after they were declared free of the virus. The disease has re-emerged three times in Liberia since it was first declared Ebola-free in May 2015. Dr. Brennan warns the WHO anticipates more flare-ups, but says there is little danger of these turning into a full-blown epidemic.
Firstly, the risk is relatively low, but it is significant. As I said, we've had 10 of these flare-ups. Secondly, the risk is going to reduce over time as the immune systems of the survivors clear the virus from the body of those survivors. And thirdly, that the countries of West Africa have put in mechanisms to manage that risk.
Brennan says the WHO and its partners are also providing medical and psychosocial care to survivors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Islamic State has claimed responsibility for yesterday's coordinated bomb and gun attack in the Indonesian capital that left 7 people dead, including all 5 attackers. The Islamic State-linked AMAK news agency says the attack in an upscale neighborhood in central Jakarta targeted foreign nationals and security forces charged with protecting them. The violence began with a series of explosions mid-morning near a shopping center, luxury hotels, embassies, and other office buildings. 6 blasts were reported. The militants engaged in intense gun battles with police throughout the day. By late afternoon, authorities declared the attack over, saying all 5 militants were killed. 2 other people, a Canadian and an Indonesian, were also killed. While clearing the area, police say they found 1 large and 5 small unexploded bombs. It is not clear why the bombs did not go off. It is also not clear why Islamic State chose to attack Jakarta. In November, Indonesian authorities had received a threat from the group about a coordinated bomb attack in the capital. The U.S. Embassy in Jakarta says it will remain closed tomorrow as a precaution following the attack. Secretary of State John Kerry condemned the assault. He said that these acts of terror are not going to intimidate nation states from protecting their citizens and continuing to provide real opportunity, education, jobs, and possibilities of a future. There is nothing in any act of terror, Kerry said, that offers anything but death and destruction. Regional political leaders in Cameroon are urging citizens to be vigilant following an attack yesterday on a mosque in a northern part of the country that killed at least 12 people. The suicide bombing was the latest in a series of attacks on mosques blamed on Boko Haram militants. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Midjiyawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, says Muslims should be on guard at mosque to help avert the kind of attacks that have plagued Muslims attending morning prayers. Bakari says he is asking the population to create vigilante groups to control access to mosques and places where people gather. He says all prayer sessions in mosques should be divided into two, with the first group praying and the second group keeping watch. The groups would then switch. He says unknown people should not be given access to mosques. Bakari says the attack in the town of Kolofata is believed to have been carried out by Boko Haram members who crossed the border into Cameroon a few days ago. He says it was the third attack on a mosque in less than 3 weeks. The town of Kolofata in Cameroon's far north, near the border, has been repeatedly attacked by Boko Haram, a Nigerian Islamic extremist group. Muslim cleric Imam Amidu Mustafa of Kolofata says asking a Muslim not to pray with others of their faith is contrary to their religious teachings, but he says it is an option when they are faced with terrorist acts. Mustafa says the most important thing is for people to forgo rivalries and to work together for peace. He says people should understand there will always be differences among them. General Koji Jacob, a senior commander of troops fighting the Boko Haram insurgency, has also called on the population to collaborate with the government by reporting suspicious strangers and denouncing suspects. He says the border between Cameroon and Nigeria is very porous and the military alone cannot secure it. Jacob says there is regular movement of people across the Cameroon-Nigeria border, and it is the role of the military to systematically check people crossing it. For the past 6 years, Boko Haram has been leading attacks on Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger in an effort to set up an Islamic caliphate. Since last November, Nigerian and Cameroonian forces have increased raids on Boko Haram strongholds to crush the insurgency. Officials say the raids have weakened Boko Haram's capacity to fight back, forcing them to attack the mosques. The group also has increasingly targeted imams and traditional chiefs for their opposition to the Islamists. Cameroon has banned the Islamic veil in an effort to preempt suicide bombings staged by attackers wearing the full face veil. According to the United Nations, about 20,000 people have been killed and left more than 2 million made homeless in Boko Haram-related violence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Three UN human rights experts are scheduled to visit Nigeria next week. They will examine what is being done to rehabilitate and reintegrate women and children who were once held captive by Boko Haram militants. The special rapporteurs on the sale of children, slavery, and the rights of health are to visit Nigeria from January 18th to the 22nd. They will evaluate various programs and initiatives by the government, international community, and NGOs to help those suffering from trauma and stigma. The rapporteurs will present a report on their visit to the UN Human Rights Council, but they will announce their preliminary findings before they leave Nigeria. In related news, the United Nations has announced more than $30 million in emergency funds for four West African countries to help those uprooted by Boko Haram attacks. More than 2.5 million people have been displaced, including 1 million children. The new funds for Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger will be used for shelter, health care, safe drinking water, and sanitation. Nine months ago, Nigeria's new president promised to stop Boko Haram's six-year reign of terror and end government corruption. He also wants to lift millions of people out of poverty. But does Muhammadu Buhari have the funds to accomplish his goals? His proposed $13.1 billion budget calls for a 20% spending increase. VOA's David Arnold reports on what lies ahead for the Nigerian leader.
For years, Nigeria's economy and its government have depended on selling crude oil to the world. But government revenues are falling right along with oil prices. Now, President Buhari faces a financial challenge in keeping his promises to voters. Nigeria has asked for a meeting of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, to discuss falling prices. The meeting could be scheduled for March. Amadou Sy is the director of the Brookings Institution's Africa Growth Initiative. The Economist looked at Mr. Buhari's 2016 budget to see if he has the financial resources to succeed.
Well, I hope he will be successful because, as you said, Nigeria is one of the engine of growth in Africa. It's the largest economy. It's the most populous economy. It's the champion in the ECOWAS in West Africa. But so far, all the signals he's giving to me are the right signals. But he has to keep on staying the course and also showing some flexibility when it needs to adjust.
With the drop in oil prices, Sy says Mr. Buhari is counting on other sources of revenue.
I think that he charts a very clear roadmap for the country, and my guess is that the main issue will be the implementation. But when it comes to the roadmap, I think he acknowledges the issues. For example, in the budget, the benchmark price of oil has been reduced from $53 per barrel to about $38 per barrel, and they've recognized that they will have less fiscal revenues. You know, two-thirds of Nigeria's government revenues typically come from oil. So what he's trying to do is have a two-pronged approach, judging from the budget. So in the short term, they will try to spend more on infrastructure. So the idea here is to spend money on power, roads, and so on. And then hopefully that will help unleash some growth in sectors like agriculture and mining, for example. By reviving the economy, the hope is to grow the non-oil economy and then tax this non-oil economy more. And then what he'll try to do is to basically widen the base for tax collection and have less corruption in the collection of revenues. As you've seen also, he has basically changed the leadership of the major revenue-generating agencies, especially the National Petroleum Corporation.
Amadou Sy recognizes that Mr. Buhari is not new to the job. He served as Nigeria's president once before. But there are a couple of areas where he thinks the president must be careful.
It's the biggest economy in the region, but there is some risk. So one is the foreign exchange policy. Will you really adopt there? And the second one is, will you be able to get the financing that you need when you need it at the interest rate you want? So there are some risks. But overall, I would give him a good grades on this budget. Now the implementation will be key. That will be really key. But he's been there before.
After so many years of government mismanagement of the Nigerian economy, it may be too late to recapture so many lost opportunities. But Sy believes Mr. Buhari has good intentions.
the country has less freedom of opportunity to really make a big dent on poverty, a big dent on human development. It was easier before. It's harder now. So he's trying. If he fails, then we will lose a lot of time and effort, and it will have human development impact on this country.
Xi adds that should Buhari fail to turn Nigeria's economy around, there could be negative consequences for Nigeria's neighbors as well. This is David Arnold at VOA News in Washington, D.C.
Niger's defense minister says four officers accused in an attempted coup have confessed. The Associated Press reports that former Chief of Staff General Soleimani Salu was among those who admitted to plotting to overthrow the government. The four officers were among 12 soldiers and 11 civilians arrested in December for allegedly trying to topple Niger President Mahamadou Issoufou. Niger is scheduled to hold the national elections on February 21st. The country has a history of military men seizing power. Twenty past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Prosecutors in Cologne, Germany, are offering a reward of nearly $11,000 in connection with sexual assaults and robberies in the city New Year's Eve celebration. The violence stirred debate in Germany over the influx of migrants and refugees. The reward is for information leading to the arrest or identification of those responsible. Witnesses have described the attackers as being Arab or North African. The Associated Press says prosecutors have received more than 650 complaints about the New Year's Eve crimes. Chancellor Angela Merkel today called for a significant reduction in the number of migrants and refugees coming to Germany. She added, however, that there must be a European solution to the crisis. The International Organization for Migration says about 1,700 migrants and refugees arrive in Europe by sea every day. Most are from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, but many Africans have also made the journey. Meanwhile, the French news agency reports that tensions are high in a camp for migrants in northern France. It reports that hundreds of people have resisted efforts to move to a permanent location as winter sets in. The camp, known as the Jungle, is located in the port city of Calais. Another round of aid convoys moved towards three besieged Syrian towns today, following the delivery of a first batch of much-needed food and medicine earlier this week. The International Red Cross, which is partnering with the United Nations and Syrian Red Crescent, said the trucks were going to Madaya, Fua, and Kifaria. The first round of convoys arrived in those three towns late Monday. Rebels opposed to President Bashar al-Assad control Madaya, a town of about 42,000 people near the Lebanese border that government troops have blockaded for months. The rebels are besieging Fua and Kafaria. The UN and others say people in Madaya have died of starvation, which the Syrian ambassador to the United Nations denied. UN humanitarian chief Stephen O'Brien said Monday 400 people in the town faced death unless they were evacuated for medical treatment, and an ICRC spokesman called the situation there heartbreaking. The UN says a total of 13.5 million Syrians need humanitarian assistance. It is seeking $7.73 billion in new funding in 2016 to assist refugees who have fled many of Syria's neighbors, as well as those who remain in the country. A new anti-poaching campaign has taken a unique approach to discouraging people from buying rhino horns. It compares taking the horns as medicine to chewing on your fingernails. English businessman Sir Richard Branson is leading the campaign that includes global wildlife ambassadors and an all-star team of Chinese celebrities. The Mandarin and English language campaign, launched by the African Wildlife Foundation, AWF, and Wild Aid, aims to promote the truth about the lack of medicinal value of rhino horn products. AWF says the horn is primarily made of keratin, a protein also found in human nails and hair. International criminal syndicates that peddle rhino horn claim it has medicinal powers when ground into powder and ingested. It's used as an aphrodisiac and even a cancer cure. Kathleen Garrigan is the Africa Wildlife Foundation media manager. She spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about the goal of their new campaign.
So the goal of the campaign is really a couple of things. It's first and foremost to get people aware in China and then subsequently in Vietnam, where this campaign will eventually go, to the rhino poaching crisis that we're experiencing in Africa. So it's a public awareness campaign. A lot of people don't know what's going on in Africa. A lot of consumers in China, potential consumers of rhino horn, just aren't aware of the devastation on the ground. Also to connect that crisis with the buying habits of consumers in countries like China and Vietnam, where the market for rhino horn is quite high due to the perception that rhino horn has some sort of medicinal value. I mean, it's a false perception. There's no evidence of that. We really want to make people aware of the crisis, but also connect it back to why are we telling you this? Why is this message coming to you via Sir Richard Branson, via different Chinese celebrities like Li Bingbing? It's because the market for rhino horn is here in Asia, it's here in Vietnam, it's here in China, and it's a growing market, and that has repercussions on the ground in Africa. And this particular campaign is really focusing on that erroneous belief that rhino horn has some sort of medicinal value, that it can cure cancer, that it can help alleviate your headache. There's no truth to that claim. In fact, rhino horn is made of keratin, which is the same thing you find in your fingernails or if you were to ingest your hair. This particular campaign and this particular message about biting your fingernails, if you perceive rhino horn to have medicinal value, there's no more medicine in consuming rhino horn than in chewing your fingernails or ingesting your hair.
So what do you think the impact will be in using a team of all-star Chinese celebrities in this nail-biting campaign?
So this is really a continuation of a campaign that we began with Wild Aid several years ago. And we found that these sort of influencers, these celebrities that have global appeal, but also really finding those celebrities in country that have a lot of status and appeal, we find that a very effective way of changing the perception, of raising awareness first and then changing the perception about these products, whether it's rhino horn or ivory. And studies that we've done with our partner Wild Aid show that that messaging with these types of advocates, with these voices, is effective and that perceptions are not immovable. You know, we did a study in 2012 and we followed up in 2014 and we see a shift in the way people are aware of this issue and then what they're doing about it. And then also that they are wanting their own government to take more action on this issue. They're wanting them to crack down more forcefully on the trade in rhino horn.
What would you say some of the things people are not doing because of the campaign that they used to do, such as are they not buying rhino horn?
The studies are showing that they're more aware of the crisis, and I think that a lot of people won't buy, if they were thinking of buying this product, they won't buy that product anymore now that they're aware of the problem. What we're also seeing is the message is really targeted toward the ordinary, the average citizen in countries like China and Vietnam, and with the arrival of Sir Richard Branson with his PSA and with his efforts on the ground in Vietnam and China, we're also reaching a different cross-section of society, you know, business leaders, prominent business leaders, industry leaders, entrepreneurs who also have a role to play. And then this messaging is also percolating all the way up to the top. We're seeing government action. We're seeing encouraging commitments by the Chinese government to crack down on the illegal wildlife trade.
What is the status of Africa's rhino population due to poaching?
So right now we have approximately 25,000 rhino in Africa. There's about 4,000 to 5,000 black rhino, and there's about 20,000 white rhino. Really, some of the best statistics we have on rhino poaching come out of South Africa. In the year 2014, we lost just over 1,200 rhinos in South Africa alone. The numbers haven't been released for the year 2015, but as of August, South Africa was again on track to lose about as many rhinos, maybe a few less than the year before, but it was sort of tracking to be about the same. We are reaching a situation where the poaching is becoming so bad that we're reaching a tipping point wherein the number of rhino deaths are going to outnumber the number of rhino births.
Kathleen Garrigan is the African Wildlife Foundation media manager. She spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis from Washington, D.C. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The World Health Organization says the most recent outbreak of Ebola in Liberia is over. And three UN human rights experts are scheduled to visit Nigeria to examine what is being done to rehabilitate and reintegrate women and children once held captive by Boko Haram militants. And Niger's defense minister says four officers accused in an attempted coup have confessed. Coming up, we'll have music from Zambia. And in our feature segment, efforts are being made to restore the Abidjan Zoo. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehi Suhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And, of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Thursday, Sunny.
Happy Thursday, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you are beginning today with boxing.
Kim, it's time to climb between the ropes once again with our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Happy New Year, Nnamdi.
And a happy New Year, Sunny.
Nnamdi, let's begin with the big boys. Unbeaten World Boxing Council heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder goes for his 36th consecutive victory on Saturday night in Brooklyn, New York. He takes on a Polish fighter, Artur Spilka. How's this fight shaping up, Nnamdi?
Well, Sunny, this is his third title defense. I'm talking about Deontay Wilder. He's a slugger. I mean, at 6'7". 35-0 with 34 knockouts, you know. But the question becomes, who are these people being knocked out? Are they overmatched opponents? Has he been tested? Has he been pushed? The question is still wide open.
Nnamdi, how would you describe Wilder's preparations for the fight?
He trains hard. He's chiseled like Hercules, you know. That's why you see he comes with his power. So he's in shape, you know. He trains very hard. So he's not your lazy heavyweight that refuses to go and run in the morning. So he's in shape.
I'm the most athletic heavyweight in the division, period. I got the highest knockout ratio in the division, God-given power. And I'm looking to perform for not only my fans, not only for New York, but for his fans as well, the Polish community. It's going to be a big variety of Polish community there. And I'm looking forward to gaining fans and taking some home with me.
Nnamdi, let's go to London now, where British heavyweight David Haye, the Haymaker, making a comeback, his first fight in almost 3.5 years.
VOA!
Tell our VOA boxing fans about that.
David Haye will take on Mark Demory from Australia, but he's out of Croatia. I really like David Haye, Sonny, because he's not only a boxer, but a promoter. He knows how to talk up the fight. He knows how to hype the fight. He knows how to get you out of your house, to come into the arena. So I really like his style. And he's a former world heavyweight champion. The boxing media, they don't like him because they feel that he talks too much. But as a fighter, you need to talk up the fight. And I really admire his style. Will he be rusty Saturday night? I think he'll be able to beat the Australian and I think find himself in a big showdown with my homeboy, Anthony Joshua.
Nnamdi, I know Haye and Wilder, for that matter, both have their share of fans in Africa. Do you see either one of them going up against Tyson Fury and unify the heavyweight titles?
That's bound to happen, Sonny. The heavyweight division now is the division that we're all talking about and looking at. There's lots of action now. We have people like David Haye, Tyson Fury. You still have a Vladimir right there, and you have your Deontay Wilder. And you have these two unknown heavyweights fighting for Tyson Fury's belt on Saturday night on the card of Deontay Wilder. So the action is there now. And with all these fighters, anything can happen. There could be an upset, and then we could see some young one come up from this whole set of heavyweights.
Now let's talk about a Nigerian heavyweight, Nnamdi. Incredible story. Ike Iwabuchi out of prison after 17 years, and it sounds like he's going to fight again. Talk to us about that.
Sonny, this is a situation where we have a young Nigerian heavyweight, explosive heavyweight, one of the best heavyweights in the late 90s. We're looking at somebody who was, at that time, bigger, stronger version of Iron Mike Tyson, Sonny. 20-0 with 15 knockouts, with incredible punching power. Well, he invited a woman to his room, Sonny, into his hotel room, and she was supposed to perform the service, you know what I'm talking about. But after the service was done, then he refused to pay. From there, he was in Las Vegas, man. They don't joke. Felony assault, battery, attempted rape, locked down for 17 years.
How much did his legal representation factor into this?
Sonny, good point you just brought up right there. This trouble started after he signed the multi-million dollar HBO deal. With a multi-million dollar deal, you're like an ATM machine, attracting the con men, hustlers, shakedown artists, women of the night. So you're wide open. With the wrong team around you, not there to protect you, you're wide open. And this is exactly what happened, and he had no good representation. My homeboy ended up in jail for 17 years.
Now in his 40s, Nnamdi, what kind of chances do you give him for making a comeback?
Sonny, remember the era when he came up was the late 90s. This was during the days of Lennox Lewis, Vitaly and Vladimir Klitschko, Ivan the Holyfield, Iron Mike Tyson. Guess what? All these guys ran away from him. I think homeboy can destroy folks at this age because he's an explosive puncher, fast hands, good chin. He's been locked down for 17 years, so there's been no damage to the body. He just lined himself up with Michael Kearns, the advisor of Manny Pacquiao. He's a good player in the game, and he can really do some good stuff with him. And I believe he can protect him because homeboy needs protection right now.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta.
Galala. Great show, bro.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma, joins us now with a package of sports news. And Mark begins with an award for a Ugandan boxer.
Edward Kakembo will be crowned Uganda Sports Press Association USPA Sports Personality of the Month of December 2015 in Kampala, Uganda, today, Thursday. USPA voted Kakembo the country's most outstanding sports personality last month when he beat Nigerian Waidi Usman in a 12-round unanimous decision to clinch the Africa Boxing Union featherweight title in Lagos, Nigeria, on the 26th of December. Turning to football, Libyan hosts Al Ittihad Tripoli edged Ghana's Kumasi Asante Kotoko 2-1 in the first of two friendly matches in Tripoli on Wednesday. In Switzerland, Jerome Valks is no longer FIFA Secretary General. The FIFA Emergency Committee disclosed in Zurich on Wednesday. The FIFA Emergency Committee has sacked Valks, and in his place, Markus Kuttner is acting Secretary General. FIFA suspended Valks for 90 days last September following allegations against him of inappropriate conduct with respect to World Cup ticket sales. The FIFA Ethics Committee extended Valks' suspension for a further 45 days when the initial suspension expired on the 5th of January. Meanwhile, Frenchman Pierre Lechantre takes over as the Congolese national team coach, the Republic of Congo Football Federation revealed in Brazzaville on Wednesday. His first order of business is to build a team for their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against Zambia in March. The Congolese are also among the 20 African teams vying for the 5 places up for grabs to the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia. In handball, Gabon upstaged their hosts Tunisia 32-29 in an international friendly played in Hammamet, some 80 kilometers southeast of the Tunisian capital Tunis. Both teams are preparing for the Africa Men's Handball Championships starting in Cairo, Egypt next week. Finally, a record 699 athletes from 154 countries have submitted preliminary entries for the World Indoor Athletics Championships, the IAAF revealed in Monaco. The biannual event takes place in Portland, Oregon State, in the United States of America from the 17th to 20th of March.
Thanks, Mark. That's Mark Gauma of our Daybreak Africa radio show, which you can hear Monday through Friday on The Voice of America. Our African football guru, David Legg, joins us now with his latest quiz.
Which club has qualified the most times to compete in the CAF Champions League, and that includes the former name of the competition. It was then known as the African Cup of Champions Clubs. So what we're talking about, Sonny, is way back to 1964 when this competition started. So it's between 1964 and 2015. Which club has qualified the most times to compete in the CAF Champions League?
2016 is a leap year, David, so we're going to set a deadline of Monday, February 29th, to get your entries in. David and I will now tell you where you can send your entries.
VOA!
It's David.Legg, and Legg is spelled L-E-G-G-E, at AFP, that's Agence France-Presse.com. So I'll just repeat that one more time. It's David.Legg, L-E-G-G-E, at AFP.com.
The Sunny Side of Sports welcomes your comments. You can send me email at sunny@voanews.com. Sunny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237. So remember, get your entries in by February 29th to David Legg's African Football Quiz. The first three people with correct answers will receive some of those delightful VOA goodies. Follow The Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. I tweeted a nice photo of unbeaten WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder. The photo was taken by Associated Press photographer Frank Franklin II, and it shows a smiling Wilder in the ring for a workout. And still on the Twitter front, Deontay Wilder's Twitter handle is @BronzeBomber. Once again, @BronzeBomber. So send the Bronze Bomber a tweet and tell him Sonny sent ya. Yeah, the Bronze Bomber, Deontay Wilder. In pro basketball news, the Golden State Warriors, the defending NBA champions, have suffered only their third loss of the season. The Warriors were beaten on Wednesday night by the Denver Nuggets, 112-110. Stephen Curry, the Golden State Warriors sharp-shooting guard, had 38 points, but it was not enough. The Warriors now with a record of 36 wins and 3 losses on the season. Elsewhere around the NBA, Los Angeles Clippers center DeAndre Jordan has been scratched from the lineup later Wednesday night because of pneumonia, ending the NBA's longest active consecutive game streak at 360. Jordan last missed a game 5 years ago. He's one of the NBA's top rebounders. Get well soon, DeAndre Jordan. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sunny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, efforts being made to restore the Abidjan Zoo, and next, protests in Zimbabwe over the lack of essential services like water. But first, some music. It is Danny of Zambia with Eleke Sambe.
Boy, hola, wabaza sana, le mona shani. Yose kula imbafi, too much of anything is bad.
Nikan Sambe, nikoi, kukatai fe, paka sande, nikan sende, nina pepji. Kukatai fe, paka sande, nikan gese, nikoi, kukatai fe, paka sande, Sunday, the car, Sunday, in a Pepsi, and we want
Danny of Zambia with the Lekasambe.
The Abidjan Zoo is slowly coming back to life after years of crisis and funding shortfalls. It became a symbol of devastation when dozens of animals starved during the 2010-2011 conflict between humans outside its walls. New lions and zebras have arrived, but hurdles remain as efforts are being made to restore the zoo to its glory days. Emily Yob reports from Abidjan.
It's another busy Saturday in the Abidjan National Zoo, the only zoo in Ivory Coast, as visitors flock to get a glimpse of primates, hippos, and crocodiles.
This species we've just seen is the slender-snouted crocodile. It is endangered and protected by the United Nations, do you understand? So we must protect them.
In its heyday 15 years ago, the zoo had about 500 animals from 50 species. But the various crises that swept the country took a toll on the zoo. During the post-election violence in 2010 and 2011, a third of the animals died of hunger. Zookeeper Tia Lama remembers having to climb trees to fetch leaves to feed the herbivores, but it wasn't enough.
We lost a lot of animals. There was no food. We couldn't go out to get some. There was a lot of damages. We lost six lions.
4 years ago, the Ivorian government voted a rehabilitation plan for the zoo to restore damaged buildings and buy new animals. Since last year, lions, ostriches and zebras are back, attracting their fair share of visitors.
It's a fun place. A lot of children don't know the animals, so the zoo allows them to get to know them.
Besides government funding, director Samuka Kane says the zoo gets help from volunteers and donations to improve the place.
If you have unexpected things happening that are not planned in the budget, financing can be a problem. So in some cases, donations help us with some rehabilitations.
And the need for renovation remains great, as old infrastructure can be a safety hazard for animals. Last May, a large chunk of the enclosure wall of the chimpanzee collapsed after heavy rains. They had to be relocated in small cages, which led to fight and a couple of primates killed. The zoo is still waiting for finances to rebuild the wall. Despite its limited funds, the zoo entrance fees hasn't changed in over a decade, between 10 and 50 cents per person. Kane says it is because the zoo is attached to its social role.
I walk around in the park and listen to the visitors. I can tell that people are realizing more and more that animals are useful and are not only for eating, but are also part of our environment.
Future plans include the opening of a children's zoo, as well as a restaurant and a gift shop. Emily Yap for VOA News in Abidjan.
In Zimbabwe, Masvingo residents have expressed concern over the city council's decision to buy luxury vehicles worth over $500,000 for high officials. They're protesting because local authorities cannot provide essential services like water. Correspondent Gandri Baramba reports.
The city council angered residents when it placed an advert in a local newspaper seeking tenders for the supply of canopies, bumpers, and mega wheels at a cost of $22,000 for Mazda BT50's twin cabs bought for council management last month. The residents are fuming that they were not consulted when the council bought the vehicles, and to make matters worse, the local authority wants to spend more money on vehicle accessories when it cannot provide necessary services to local people. Tryson Gavi of Runyaroro West High Density Suburb said it is improper for the city council to seek tenders for the supply of canopies, bumper stickers and other items while it cannot cater for the needs of local ratepayers.
I think we are very saddened with such a development that the city fathers currently took, because considering the amount that they used to purchase the vehicles, it was never budgeted for and they never consulted us as residents. To add to that, they also went to fork out nearly 22,000 in buying things like canopies, which is a lot of money. City council need to prioritize.
Another resident, Jefferson Chitando of Mucheke, said the council is abusing residents' money and called on for the local authority to be accountable.
We've been always saying that the road levy, which was going to be introduced and which was introduced sometime last year by the city council, they have got to account for it and they have got to really show the people the roads which they have made.
But Masvingo Mayor Hubert Fidze defended the decision, saying the council is trying to please local residents while catering for the needs of its management.
In as much as we say we prioritize on purchasing vehicles, but I think we're actually trying to balance every service delivery within the city. If you look at the way we are working on our roads, I think we are really moving in a positive way. In as much as lighting as well, water and everything, well, even the government is here with us.
Masingo United Residents and Red Pears Association Mura Director Anoziva Muguti said the residents' body is worried about what the council is doing.
Yeah, first and all, we are very worried about the way council is expending our financial resources by buying those luxurious cars for the top management at the expense of service delivery. That alone left us wondering what direction they want to take the residents to.
Residents have vowed to force the council to stop looking for vehicle accessories for the city council managers and concentrate on providing services for red payers. In Masingo, I am Country Maramba.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The peaceful conduct and high turnout in the first round of presidential and parliamentary elections in the Central African Republic are clear signs that Central Africans seek a new beginning for their country and a future based on democratic governance and free from the violence and instability that have plagued the country for far too long. The United States commends all Central Africans who, with support from international forces, ensured the vote on December 30 was peaceful and secure. As the Central African Republic moves towards the second round of elections in the coming weeks, we reiterate our desire to see this spirit of peace, tolerance, and free expression. And we strongly urge all parties and their supporters to peacefully address any disputes regarding the recent announcement of results through the Central African legal system. These elections are an historic opportunity for Central Africans to build a united, prosperous, and democratic future for their country and establish a government that reflects the country's rich geographic, ethnic, and religious diversity. In that effort, they will find a steadfast supporter in the United States. The United States stands with the Central African Republic at this critical moment and will continue to be a strong friend and ally of the Central African people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
Next on Reporters Roundtable. Join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable. I'll have African journalists and expert guests take a look at upcoming elections in Africa in the year 2016. So please join us on Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. VOA. Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.